Russ is up next on this monologue. I'm going to set it up. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, 2005. Screenwriters Douglas Adams, Carey Kirkpatrick. Sperm whale in a bowl of petunias ruminations. The humorous speech by the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, known as the book, the narrator, or the guide, regarding how the orbiting spaceship Heart of Gold, powered by the infinite probability device, suddenly transformed two nuclear missiles into a giant sperm whale and a bowl of petunias. As the sperm whale fell out of orbit through the Magrathian atmosphere toward the alien planet, its thought processes were described. Take it away, Russ.
It is important to note that suddenly and against all probability, a sperm whale had been called into existence several miles above the surface of an alien planet. But since this is not a naturally tenable position for a whale, this innocent creature had very little time to come to terms with its identity. This is what it thought as it fell.
Ah! Whoa! What's happening? Who am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose in life? What do I mean by, who am I? Whoa! Whoa! Okay! Okay! Calm down! Calm down! Get a grip now! Ooh, this is an interesting sensation! What is it? It's a sort of tingling in my... Well, I suppose I better start finding names for things. Let's call it a... tail! Yeah, tail! And, hey, what's this roaring sound whooshing past what I'm suddenly going to call my head? Wind! Is that a good name? It'll do. Yeah, this is really exciting. I'm dizzy with anticipation. Or is it the wind? There's an awful lot of that now, isn't it? And what's this thing coming toward me very fast? So big and flat and round, it needs a big wide-sounding name like... Ow. Ow. Round. Ground. That's it, ground. Ha! I wonder if it'll be friends with me. Hello, ground!
Curiously, the only thing that went through the mind of the bowl of petunias as it fell was, oh no, not again! Many have speculated that if we knew exactly why the bowl of petunias had thought that, we should know a lot more about the nature of the universe than we do now.
That was Russ. Devil Wears Prada 2006, Aline Brosh McKenna is the screenwriter about fashion stuff. While deciding between two belts for an outfit, recent college grad and co-assistant Andrea Andy Sachs mentioned that they both looked exactly the same and that she was still learning about this stuff. Ruthless, powerful, demanding, and cynical fashion magazine runway editor-in-chief Miranda Priestley responded to directly humiliate her. We have two people on this monologue, Rochelle and Temp. Rochelle got there first. She made it worth 10 points. Let's listen. By the way, again, for those of you that have forgotten, Russ made his monologue 23 points. They are now at 263.5. Take it away, Rochelle.
This stuff. Oh, okay. I see. You think this has nothing to do with you. You go to your closet and you select, I don't know, that lumpy blue sweater, for instance. Because you're trying to tell the world that you take yourself too seriously to care about what you put on your back. But what you don't know is that sweater is not just blue. It's not turquoise. It's not lapis. It's actually cerulean. And you're also blithely unaware of the fact that in 2002, Oscar de la Renta did a collection of cerulean gowns. And then I think it was Yves Saint Laurent, wasn't it? Who showed cerulean military jackets? Oh, I think we need a jacket here. And then cerulean quickly showed up in the collection of 8 different designers. And then it had filtered down through the department stores. And then trickled on down into some tragic, casual corner where you, no doubt, fished it out of some clearance bin. However, that blue represents millions of dollars and countless jobs, and it's sort of comical how you think that you've made a choice that exempts you from the fashion industry when... in fact, you're wearing the sweater that was selected for you by the people in this room from a pile of stuff.
And Temporary Butterfly, you're up.
This stuff? Huh. Okay. I see. You think this has nothing to do with you? You go to your closet and you select, I don't know, that lumpy blue sweater, for instance, because you're trying to tell the world that you take yourself too seriously to care about what you put on your back. But what you don't know is that that sweater is not just blue. It's not turquoise. It's not lapis. It's actually cerulean. And you're also blithely unaware of the fact that in 2002, Oscar de la Renta did a collection of cerulean gowns. And then I think it was Yves Saint Laurent, wasn't it, who showed cerulean military jackets? I think we need a jacket here. And then cerulean quickly showed up in the collections of 8 different designers. And then it all filtered down to the department stores and then trickled on down into some tragic casual corner where you no doubt fished it out of some clearance bin. However, that blue represents millions of dollars and countless jobs, and it's sort of comical how you think that you've made a choice that exempts you from the fashion industry when, in fact, you're wearing the sweater that was selected for you by the people in this room from a pile of stuff.
That was Rochelle and Temp. They are battling it out for 10 points on the Devil Wears Prada.
Nice.
Shall we start with Rochelle?
Sure.
All right. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to?
You.
You have a very specific style when you do monologues, Rochelle. Sometimes, like, you sound like you're reading to children. Like, you always put characterizations into your monologues, and they always sound, like, you always do it well, like, characterizing, but they, a lot of times, sound really reedy. So it would be really cool if you, like, internalized stuff more. I really like the bitchiness you had, though. What did you think?
That actually pretty much, like, sorts out my own thoughts. Like, I was trying to figure out how to word them, and you did it very well with that. Like, you did a very good read, but it sort of just sounded like a read. But I liked the character you had for it, though. And I think that if you just taken it up, like, a tiny bit, it would have been phenomenal.
Teb, your quality was kind of weird to me, and sometimes you slurred your words. So those two things going together didn't help a lot, but I liked the character you built, and I felt that you really had, like, the bitchiness down, and it felt less reedy to me. What did you think of Temp?
Temp. I loved, the, like, the posh little accent. Like, right away I started thinking of Georgette from Oliver and Company for some reason. But I liked the character you had for it, and while it did get a little, like, warbled and slurry, like you said, I really liked the way that you, like, really made this into a bitchy character. So, yeah.
Did you pick a winner?
I did.
I did as well. Who did you pick?
I picked Temp.
I picked Temp as well. So, team Oscar gets 10 points there at 189.5. Next up, 2007, 24 points. Pirates of the Caribbean, Spiral is the only one on this monologue. She made it 24 points. She said 24 points for the screaming, so let's listen. Oh, wait, we have to set it up. Do you want to set it up?
Sure.
Go for it.
Here it is. Okay. Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, 2007. Screenwriters Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio. A rallying cry to fight. Newly appointed pirate captain of the Black Pearl, Elizabeth Swan, played by Keira Knightley, faced insurmountable odds in the upcoming sea battle between the British fleet led by dastardly Lord Cutler Beckett, Tom Hollander, with support from tentacle-faced Davy Jones, Bill Nighy, or Nighy, or I don't even know, and her small motley pirate crew on a few bedraggled ships. However, she rallied her pirate forces with stirring heroic words to hoist the colors as she stood on the side railing of the ship.
Let's listen to Spiral rallying her crew.
Woo!
Then what shall we die for? You will listen to me. Listen! The Brethren will still be looking here! To us! To the Black Pearl to lead! And what will they see? Frightened bilgeats aboard a derelict ship? No! No, they will see free men! And freedom! And what the enemy will see is the flash of our cannons! They will hear the ring of our swords! And they will know what we can do! By the sweat of our brows, and the strength of our backs, and the courage of our hearts. Gentlemen, hoist the colors.
That was Spiral. That was worth 24 points. So Team Bollywood at 86. Good job, Spiral. That was a really strong monologue, I thought.
I thought it was, too.
Malt said she wished we were critiquing this because she really enjoyed it. If you want to say something to her, go ahead.
Oh, no, like, the only thing I really had to say was that, like, you definitely didn't hold back, and that showed. It was really cool, so.
Yeah, that was the best monologue from you. You also didn't do that, in the past, I thought you sounded a little anime, and it sounded to me like you didn't do that anime-ish voice style. I really liked it. You sounded really good on this monologue. I believed you were Elizabeth Swann. And sexy Keira Knightley. Okay. 2008, The Dark Knight, Copper, and Blackjack. Copper is on this monologue first, 30 points. Blackjack apparently told them he sent me his monologue yesterday. I never got it, so Reed sent it in. That's why I called him a bitch earlier. But apparently he's not a bitch. His email just got lost. This monologue is worth 30 points. Copper versus Blackjack. Dark Knight, 2008, screenwriters, Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan. So you want to know how I got him? Scars, Now I'm Always Smiling. The grotesque Joker gave an intimidating rant about the origins of his hideous facial scars to beautiful Rachel Dolls, Harvey Squeeze, while brandishing a knife at her. One of the many times in the film that he recited similar but conflicting origin stories as the camera circled around them disorientingly. Copper, you're on this monologue first. Take it away, sir.
Why you look nervous? Is it the scars? You want to know how I got them? Come here. Hey, look at me. So I had a wife, beautiful, like you, who tells me I worry too much, who tells me I ought to smile more, who gambles and gets in deep with the sharks. Look at me. One day, they carve her face, and we got no money for surgeries. She can't take it. I just want to see her smile again. I just want her to know that I don't care about the scars. So I stick a razor in my mouth and do this to myself. And you know what? She can't stand the sight of me. She leaves. Now I see the funny side. Now I'm always smiling.
Blackjack, up next.
Well, you look so nervous. Is that the scars? You want to know how I got them? Come here. Right. Hey, look at me. So, I had a wife, beautiful, like you, who tells me I worry too much. Who tells me I ought to smile more. Who gambles and gets it in deep with sharks. Look at me. One day, they carve her face. And we have no money for surgeries. She can't take it. I just want to see her smile again. I just want her to know that I don't care about the scars. So I stick a razor in my mouth and do this to myself. And you know what? She can't stand the sight of me. She leaves. Now I see the funny side. Now I'm always smiling.
That was Blackjack and Copper. Let us start with Copper. You can start first.
Okay. And can I just say, once again, this is a monologue where you both did absolutely amazing on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my god, I'm having such a hard time. Alright, well, Copper, you did so good. You have been bringing it lately, and you did a great job on this voice. You did... I just have the word wonderful in my notes, like, 4 times. Really, like, you did wonderful on this monologue. The only thing I can say is I wish it had been a little bigger at the end.
Yeah. I liked and, the like, mouth noises yeah. he made.
That, yes, oh my god. Like, you really did a great job on this, Copper. I don't have anything bad to say, like, outside of, I wish that there had just been, like, a bit of a bang at the end.
Yeah, I kind of wish that, too. But other than that, I agree with everything Malt said. You've done a great job. You've really improved a lot on this show, and I've been really impressed with you lately as well. You've come a long way from Carp the Night, or Carp the Day. And that was only 2 weeks ago, so. Blackjack, I like yours as well. I like the build on it. I didn't like your voice as much as I liked Copper's voice, but I like the build at the end better than I like Copper's build at the end. So I'm also having trouble deciding
on a winner for this one as well. Did you pick a winner?
I did, and yeah, like, very quick, I just want to say for Blackjack, like, pretty much exactly what Dylan said. Like, I liked Copper's voice a little more, but you had that build that we were missing in Copper's. But, like, you both took, like, different sides of the coin, which is really awful because that's more, like, freaking Two-Face. But you guys both did so well, and this is so hard to choose.
For me, personally, since it's an acting competition, not a voice competition, I picked Blackjack because I liked his build a little bit better. But who did you pick?
I pick Copper.
That means Team Bollywood and Team Utterly Absurd split the 30 points. So, Team Bollywood, you guys are at 101, and Team Utterly Absurd are at 278.5. We have one monologue left. It's Heaven Incarnate versus Zigbar. It is the monologue from The Hangover. You want to read the final monologue of the season? You want to set it up?
Sure.
Go for it.
All right, The Hangover, 2009. Surprisingly, one of the movies Malt has not seen. Screenwriters John Lucas and Scott Moore, the Wolfpack toast. Once they had arrived in Las Vegas and acquired a villa at the Caesars Palace Casino/Hotel, groom-to-be Doug, played by Justin Bartha, and his three groomsmen went to the rooftop to drunkenly make toasts. Alan Garner, played by Zach
Galifianakis,
whatever, offered these words, claiming they were blood brothers.
Heaven Incarnate made this monologue worth 30 points. Yes. And Heaven is first, and then we'll hear Zigbar. Good luck, guys. Last monologue of the season.
I'd like to. I'd like to say something that I've prepared tonight. Hello. How about that ride in? I guess that's why they call it Sin City. You guys may not know this, but I consider myself a bit of a loner. I tend to think of myself as a one-man wolf pack. But when my sister brought Doug home, I knew he was one of my own. And my wolf pack, it grew by one. So it was there were two of us in the pack. I was alone at first in the pack, and you know, then Doug joined in later, and 6 months ago, when Doug introduced me to you guys, I thought, wait a second, could this be? And now, I know for sure. I just added two more guys to my wolf pack. Four of us wolves running around the desert together in Las Vegas looking for strippers and cocaine. So tonight, I make a toast. Blood Brothers!
Next up is Zigbar with the final read of the season.
I'd like to say something that I've prepared tonight. Hello? How about that writing? I guess that's why they call it Sin City. You guys might not know this, but I consider myself a bit of a loner. I tend to think of myself as a one-man wolf pack. But when my sister brought Doug home, I knew he was one of my own. And my wolf pack, He grew by one. So there were two of us in the wolf pack. I was alone at first in the pack, and then Doug joined in later. And 6 months ago, when Doug introduced me to you guys, I thought, wait a second, could it be? And now I know for sure. I just added two more guys to my wolf pack. Four of us wolves running around the desert together in Las Vegas looking for strippers and cocaine. So tonight, I make a toast. Blood Brothers?
That was Zigbar and Heaven. What did you think of Heaven?
What?
What did you think of Heaven Incarnate?
Alright. Okay, so Heaven. I can't stop laughing. Oh my god. Okay, so first off, you guys both did really well in this because I was just laughing so much. Alright, but I loved the sound effects that you added in Heaven. I thought that, like, really made it. I think that you, like, did well with the drunk part, but I feel like it sounded almost a bit too coherent to be drunk. But again, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know if, like, he's tipsy or full out, like, plastered. I don't know, but you did good with the drunk thing. You did really well with the sound effects. I really loved your take on this, so good job.
I loved it, too. This was another one really close for me. I loved when you were talking about how you were a one-man wolf pack, and then there was another one, and then you explained it. Just the way you explained it was so funny to me. I liked the whole thing. I liked your read on this a lot. I think this was a great finale level read. Zigbar, I liked yours a lot as well. I preferred your ending to Heaven's, but I preferred Heaven's beginning to yours, so it was tough for me. I liked the voice you chose. It was kind of like Andy Kaufman was reading this monologue. I loved the screams of pain you were making when you were cutting your hand, and I liked your Blood Brothers at the end. Both of these were just really good, Malt.
Alright. Yeah, like, I feel like Zigbar, like, had a more humorous take on it. Like, I don't know, like, it was just, you guys both did so good. This was definitely, like, a finale-worthy monologue, because I just can't stop laughing. And it was just really good. You guys both did very well. I liked Zigbar. Like, it was so interesting to hear Zigbar on something not, like, serious.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. And so, this is really hard. You guys, like, I swear to God, this is an awesome finale because almost every single, like, thing where we've had to critique, it's been a hard choice.
It really has.
Like, you all did so good. Zigbar, Heaven, you're making this last choice a tough choice.
Did you make a decision?
Yeah, I did.
I did too. For me, it was really hard, but for me, the fact that Heaven read his so seriously and he was so genuine in his reading, that made it even funnier for me, so I went with Heaven.
I went with Heaven because the sound effects in there, like, just the little, like, crumpling of the paper and, like, how it sounded like he was fidgeting up there, yeah, like, that made it for me as well, so.
Well, Heaven, you get 30 points for your team. I hope you guys have enjoyed being on the show and doing monologues this summer. Final scores, Team Bollywood 101, Team Heaven Sucks 158, Team Oscar 189.5, and the winners, Team Utterly Absurd with 278.5. Everybody on Team Utterly Absurd will get a badge.
Mm-hmm.
That is Janie Girly 07, Genesis, Blackjack AV, Russ, and Reed. So congratulations, you guys. You guys did a great job all season. Everybody did a great job. I've enjoyed being on the show, and I've enjoyed you, Malt.
Oh, well, thank you, Dylan. I've enjoyed you, too. And I have seriously had a lot of fun on this. Like, I love doing this show. So, great job, everybody. You made this a very enjoyable experience for me.
If you guys are looking for something to do now that you have this free time on your hands, Rochelle is producing a show called... it was called Trapped in the Subway. I don't remember what the new name is because Trapped in the Subway is so stuck in my head. But that's casting right now. I'm one of the team captain people for that show along with Allison and Sakono. We're going to be buzzing for people to come onto our team if you want to audition for that. Or the mixtape, which I'm producing, is also casting. There are also other things casting. Melly's doing a VH Survivor, which is a singing competition. There's a lot casting right now, so go check that stuff out. Thank you guys again for listening. Thank you, Malt, for being on the show with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dylan, for having me here.
You're welcome. I will have you anytime. Good night, everybody.
Night.